It's great to be with you again. This day is March 12th, 2024 of the Common Era and the Time, 1700 hours, Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green here, and we're looking at Chapter 8 once again of the Crucible of Credible Creed from 2012, the original publishing date, although it's been edited, as most of the articles have. The ones that I wrote. A visitor to Egypt. This is the inset here in paragraph 6. We read Herodotus, what he said about Joseph's canal yesterday, that the water that came to the lake Moiris was provided by the canal from the Nile. Which was, of course, we now know the name of it is Joseph's Canal, from this other sources, of course. And Mr. Francis Cope Whitehouse was a very big, what do we call him? A very big proponent of restoring this region that was irrigated by Joseph's Canal. He wanted it to be reinvigorated and restored back to its former condition, where the land would be more fertile. And so let's read the inset here. Now, this is an inset written by, I believe, Samuel Kerensky, a big, big researcher. By the way, the Blessed Genealogy also has the acronym BG, which is the word big, right? A visitor to Egypt, in the inset we see here, we see a nice picture. Looks clickable, but I'm not sure if I click on it, it will actually work. But we can just expand it a bit like that. A visitor to Egypt, if he would abjure the euphoria of viewing a mere mirage of Egypt from the deck of a floating hotel on the Nile, abjure meaning, not do it, if he would choose a different path. Let me just see what I can do with this. Oh yeah, we haven't selected our, there it is. There's the picture. Quite nice. And if a visitor to Egypt would, instead of viewing a mere mirage of Egypt from the deck of a floating hotel on the Nile, if he would instead thread through the countryside west of the Nile, that one could not but be impressed by the multiplicity of farms and orchards being watered by the web of canals drawn from the Bar Yusef, remarkable, important waterway, named after Joseph, the son of Jacob, who was the son of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. This visitor would see groves of date palms alternating with green fields of grain, verdant vegetable patches, and wide expanses of white-capped cotton plants. And then we have, this is all a big quotation, continuing the quotation, whether the saga of Joseph is taken as true in whole or in part, one fact remains. Of all the wonders that the Amu wrought for Egypt, the Amu being the name given to the Semitic Israelite, in other words, people, or at least the Semitic peoples that came to Egypt, including the Israelites, of all the wonders that the Amu wrought for Egypt, none exceeds this great work for excellence. None testifies more eloquently to their genius. None bears better witness to their inspired accomplishments. This great work being today, continuing to read here, after more than 3,000 years, the Bar Yosef functions vigorously and converts more desolate desert into rich farmland than does the Aswan Dam. And it performs its function benignly, unlike the dam, which increases the salinity of the soil as it is irrigated, a condition that portends ecological disaster. And that is the end of the quote by the work, or in the work of Samuel Kurinsky, a quote from his work, Egypt and the Semites, Part 2, the Second Intermediate Period, Fact Paper 10-2, or 10-Roman numeral 2. Samuel Kurinsky, he recognized the Bar Yosef also. Now we can read a little bit more, and it's about what Francis Cope Whitehouse did, and also Alan Gardner. Having found his own evidence on the site, how aquatic life had once abounded there, even how there had been two lakes there at one time, Mr. Francis Cope Whitehouse presented a proposal in 1883 CE to rebuild this original canal system. His advice was ignored until Sir Alan Gardner voiced this same recommendation decades later, and the canal system was rebuilt. Documentation for which is too difficult to find. Seeing Joseph's Canal is said to water one-third of Egypt. So considering that it does so much, why is the documentation so hard to find? Well, anti-Semitism is the answer to that question. Nobody wants to promote the Bible publicly because it's an embarrassment to them because of anti-Semitism. That's at least one good explanation. And also, of course, it's from God, right? And things that are from God, a wise thing of God, you know, is foolishness to men and a foolish thing. What is that? Let's look that up. We haven't got our scripture for today yet, but wise thing of God. A foolish thing of God is wiser than men. Let's look this up. No, that's not it. Okay. Let's look up foolish thing. Foolish thing of God is wiser. There it is. 1 Corinthians 1 and 25, because a foolish thing of God is wiser than men, and a weak thing of God is stronger than men. But also, the wisdom of the world is foolishness to God. And where is that? Let's look that up. Let's see. Well, the speech about the torture stake in 1 Corinthians 1 and 18 is foolishness to those who are perishing. So, you know, in the same way, the Bible is foolishness to the world. They see the Bible as foolishness, but a foolish thing of God is wiser than men. And, well, we can't start into this. That's a long, this is a big conversation if we start into that. We're done with that for now. Let's do a daily scripture for today. Let's find something to read. Now, little children, for our daily proverb. Let's see, maybe we can find something more here. Right. One and 14 of Ecclesiastes. Does that work for today? Let me see. Yeah, it does. I think so. Here it is. Ecclesiastes 1 and 14. I saw that all things that by day's light are done cause shortness of breath, vein of profit to one. Vein of profit to one. In other words, everything is vanity. As Solomon wrote there. And now, all things that by day's light are done cause shortness of breath, vain of profit to one. A striving after wind, Solomon called it also in another translation. Now we're about to read our first scriptural reading for today, apart from our proverb, which is 2 Chronicles chapter 2. And by the way, there's a wonderful commentary on 2 Chronicles by Adam Clark. And you can find it online somewhere, perhaps Bible Hub or some other website. These two books were considered as one, 2 Chronicles and 1 Chronicles, at one time, evidently. But, yeah, there's a lot of things talked about there. It was evidently written by Ezra. One reason being that he uses the word rafts in a different Hebrew word than was used previously in 1 Kings 5 and 9. At 2 Chronicles 2:16, which we're reading today, the word for rafts there, used by the writer, who was evidently Ezra, was a word that was not in usage at the prior time of 1 Kings 5 and 9, when that was written, or at least at an earlier time than Ezra and his day, or than the time of the end of the Babylonian exile. And Calme is a scholar who considers these words as strong evidence that the books were the work of Ezra and were penned after the captivity in Babylon. Solomon now, he lived long before the captivity at Babylon, some 430 years or 420 years before the captivity. Actually, let me think, 400, yeah. Solomon now gave the word to build the house to Jehovah's name and the house for his kingship. Accordingly, Solomon counted off 70,000 men as burden bearers and 80,000 men as cutters in the mountain, and as overseers over them, 3,600. I think we're going to come back to that at the end of the chapter. Further, Solomon sent to Hiram, the king of Tyre, saying, "Just as you dealt with David my father and kept sending him cedar wood to build himself a house in which to dwell, here I am building a house to the name of Jehovah my God, to sanctify it to him, to burn perfumed incense before him, with the constant layer bread and burnt offerings in the morning and in the evening, on the Sabbaths and on the new moons, and at the festival seasons, of Yahweh, our God. To time indefinite this will be upon Israel, and the house that I am building will be great, for our God is greater than all the other gods. And who could retain power to build him a house? For the heavens and the heaven of the heavens cannot contain him. And who am I that I should build him a house except for making sacrificial smoke before him? And now send me a skillful man to work in gold and in silver and in copper and in iron and in wool dyed reddish purple and crimson and blue thread and knowing how to cut engravings along with the skillful ones that are with me in Judah and in Jerusalem whom David my father has prepared. And send me timbers of cedar, juniper, and algum from Lebanon, for I myself well know that your servants are experienced at cutting down the trees of Lebanon. And here my servants are together with your servants, even for preparing timbers for me in great number, for the house that I am building will be great. Yes, in a wonderful way. And look, to the gatherers of wood, the cutters of the trees, I do give wheat as food for your servants, 20,000 cores, a core being a measure of wheat, and barley 20,000 cores, and wine 20,000 baths, a bath being a measure of liquid, and oil 20,000 baths. At that, Hiram, the king of Tyre, said the word in writing and sent it to Solomon. Because Jehovah loved his people, he has constituted you king over them. And Hiram went on to say, Blessed be Yahweh, the God of Israel, who made the heavens and the earth, because he has given to David the king a wise son. We want to talk about this a little bit. Experienced in discretion and understanding, who will build a house to Yahweh and a house for his kingship. And now I do send a skillful man, experienced in understanding, belonging to Hiram Abi, or Hiram Abi, Hiram Abi. Abi being the word for, or Abba, the word for father, to Hiram, the father, in other words. The son of a woman of the sons of Dan is this skillful man, but whose father was a man of Tyre. Experienced to work in gold and in silver, in copper, in iron, in stones and in timbers, in wool dyed reddish purple, in blue thread and in fine fabric and in crimson, and at cutting every sort of engraving and at designing every sort of device that may be given to him, along with your own skillful men and the skillful men of my lord David your father. And now the wheat and the barley, the oil and the wine that my lord has promised, let me send to his servants. That's very important. Verse 14, my lord David your father. That is almost proof positive that it's the same Hiram who sent wood to David when David was building his house shortly after 1050 BCE, which means that this Hiram must have been at least old enough, but if not reigning as king at the time, but probably he was reigning as king. But it would mean he reigned as king from the time of about, I think we said 1046 was the time we estimated for that, when Hiram sent wood to David. And that would mean another 6 years would be 52 years. But he was said to have lived for 53 years. In one, the only source we have regarding his kingship, which is from Josephus, but it's also quoting from Menander, I believe, who kept the records, or copied them, the records of the kings of Tyre. I was going to say Tyrian kings, or kings of Tyre. But in those records it said that Hiram only ruled for 34 years, but we wrote in another article, I think it was maybe the Wild Road article, was it? Or was it? No, I would remember that because we studied the Wild Road article. So I think it was a later article that I talked about that, possibly in the article called True, or at least one of the later articles. And we described 53 years as being, instead of the age of Hiram at his death, the 53 years would fit if it were hit the length of his rulership from 1046 to about 993. It's 53 years in the BCE years, that is, 53 years that he reigned. And if that were true, then he could have been alive at the end of Solomon's construction of both Jehovah's house and his own house, which is 20 years starting in 1014. A little bit of math here to get us down to 994, which would be 52 years after Hiram had sent wood to David. He could still be ruling as king at that time when Solomon gave a gift to him in giving him, I think he gave him one city, or did he give him several cities? At least one city he gave to Hiram as a gift. And we know that was after Solomon had completed the construction of not only Jehovah's house, but also another house of his own, or several other houses. But at least it was 20 years from the beginning of the construction of Jehovah's house, according to the scriptures. We have that information. And now the wheat and the barley, the oil and the wine that my Lord has promised, let him what you promised Solomon, let you send to his servants. As for ourselves, we shall cut down trees from Lebanon, Hiram wrote, according to all your need, and we shall bring them to you as rafts by sea. Now, this is still before the construction began on the temple. This is about the year 1015, or, you know, prior to 1014, when the foundation of the temple was laid, or when the construction began, with regard to the cedar part of the house anyway. But around the time of 1014 BCE was definitely, that was the exact year, we think, when the foundation was laid. But it's around that time when these things would be taking place for the construction to be prepared. And we shall bring them to you, and there's the word rafts, as rafts by sea. They brought the wood. They lashed them together as rafts, brought them by sea to Joppa. I assume they were lashed together, somehow held together anyway, brought by sea to Joppa, and you, for your part, Solomon, will take them up to Jerusalem. So they found an ingenious way to get the wood to the construction site by making them into rafts and carrying them over the Mediterranean that way. Whether they were navigating on board the rafts or whether they were just dragging them behind their ship, it's not quite clear. Then Solomon took account of all the men that were alien residents who were in the land of Israel after the census that David his father had taken of them, and it came to be found 153,600. This is the alien residents alone. So imagine how many millions of Israelites there were. We don't have the exact number, but we could try and calculate more as we learn more. So he made 70,000 of them burden bearers, as we read in verse 1, and 80,000 cutters in the mountain, or verse 2 rather, and 3,600 overseers for keeping the people in service. And that's the end of 2 Chronicles chapter 2. We get almost a vivid picture of how the construction of the temple was organized from that chapter alone. Quite remarkable, is it not? We have enough time, hopefully, to do Amos chapter 3 now. Little children, it says, hear this word that Jehovah has spoken concerning you, O sons of Israel, concerning the whole family that I brought up out of the land of Egypt, saying, you people only have I known out of all the families of the ground. That is why I shall hold an accounting against you for all your errors. Verse 3. Will two walk together unless they have met by appointment? Will a lion roar in the forest when it has no prey? Will a young maned lion give forth its voice from its hiding place if it has caught nothing at all? Not likely, right? Because if it roared before it caught the prey, then the prey would be long gone. Will a bird fall into a trap on the earth when there is no snare for it? Does a trap go up from the ground when it has absolutely caught nothing? If a horn is blown in a city, do not also the people themselves tremble? If a calamity occurs in the city, do not also the people, is it not also Jehovah who has acted? For the sovereign Lord Yahweh will not do a thing unless he has revealed his confidential matter to his servants, the prophets. There is a lion that has roared. Who will not be afraid? The sovereign Lord Jehovah himself has spoken. Who will not prophesy? Publish it in the dwelling towers in Ashdod and on the dwelling towers in the land of Egypt, and say, be gathered together against the mountains of Samaria, and see the many disorders in the midst of her and cases of defrauding inside her. And they have not known how to do what is straightforward, is the utterance of Jehovah. Those who are storing up violence and despoiling in their dwelling towers. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Yahweh has said. There is an adversary even round about the land, and he will certainly bring your strength down from you and your dwelling towers will actually be plundered. From that, it sounds like Israel has not been captured yet, which is interesting, because we believe that this had already occurred at the time of the writing of the book of Amos, according to some commentators. This is what Jehovah has said: just as the shepherd snatches away from the mouth of the lion two shanks, or a piece of an ear, so the sons of Israel will be snatched away. Though sitting in Samaria on a splendid couch and on a damascene, or damascene, how do you pronounce that? On a damascene, I think, divan. Hear and give witness in the house of Jacob is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah, the God of armies. For in the day of my holding and accounting for the revolts of Israel against him, I will also hold an accounting against the altars of Bethel, and the horns of the altar will certainly be cut off and must fall to the earth. Bethel was the center of false worship, with one of the calves that was an idol god that was located there having been worshipped as a false god. And I will strike down the winter house in addition to the summer house. And the houses of ivory will have to perish, and many houses will have to come to their finish, is the utterance of Jehovah. We are finished, and we have 6 minutes remaining. I think we did well there to get that done. There's so much that is known, even though there are a lot of things that are not known about the times of the Israelites in times gone by. But one of the things that keeps coming up over and over and over again is Jehovah saying, I brought you up out of Egypt. That keeps occurring over and over. He keeps saying that. And yet, if you look at the secular world, the scholarly world, many of them don't even believe that Israel was ever in Egypt. They don't even acknowledge that. So how can they accept the Bible if they don't acknowledge that? Because the Bible says everywhere, it says, Jehovah says, I brought you up out of Egypt. Clearly, they had to be in Egypt for him to bring them up out of Egypt. That's pretty obvious. So it really comes down to, you know, how much faith do you put in the Bible? That's what it comes down to. And the reason, of course, for putting faith in the Bible would be that you've examined it and shown to yourself, found out for yourself, just how accurate it is. One of the most famous archaeologists of all time, Nelson Gluck, said that there's never been an archaeological discovery that has controverted a biblical reference, which is meaning that the Bible is 1,000% accurate in terms of archaeology. So what is it really that we would doubt regarding what the Bible says? I mean, there's no reason based on that alone to doubt the Bible. Surely that would be enough for most people. I mean, that's astonishing. That's the most amazing thing you could ever imagine for such a great archaeologist to say about the Bible and its reliability. The point is about the reliability of the Bible. It's never been controverted. In other words, that means, the word controverted means spoken against or proven wrong. It's never been proven wrong, ever, with regard to any city of ancient times. It's been 100% accurate every time, which I exaggerate by saying 1,000% accurate. It's basically a perfect record of ancient history. I just wanted to say that, among all the other things that I don't have time to say usually, but that's important to realize because if it's accurate, the Bible should be therefore utilized today more than it is by most people. It certainly shouldn't be rejected as being, you know, a myth, or it shouldn't be rejected as being untrue, because it's not the case. That isn't the case. It's, on the contrary, very true, or the most true thing that has ever been written by anyone. And how can that be also? I mean, there aren't any other works that compare to it in terms of its inspired accuracy. The reason why we believe it to be accurate is because we believe that the men who wrote it were inspired. That's how we account for the accuracy. Because accuracy doesn't come from men. I mean, it just doesn't. The truth doesn't come from men. Not unless they're inspired. That's the idea, that God is the true God, which means he inspires true utterances. And that's how the Bible can be true, is because God inspired it. But when we found these things about the Bar Yosef and the wonderful thing that also both Samuel Kerensky and Francis Cope Whitehouse wrote about concerning the Fayum region and this wonderful irrigation system that was better than the Aswan Dam. I mean, that was something, when I discovered that this existed, I was just, and that took a lot of research to find, but when I discovered it existed, I was even more incredulous than I had already been about the genealogy and about the research, you know, that I've been doing about the family of Jacob and Joseph and the Egyptian history of the Israelites. I mean, it proves they were in Egypt too, if they built waterways, and I mean, obviously they were in Egypt even if they didn't build waterways. But the fact they built waterways in Egypt, that Joseph was the one in charge of all that, it makes it clear that he could have easily been the Pharaoh of Egypt if he did that. Or that one of his sons could have been the Pharaoh of Egypt, or both of his sons could have been different pharaohs of Egypt because of all of that. That what they did with that irrigation system was absolutely phenomenal. And the Wadi Rayyan that was promoted by Francis Cope Whitehouse led to the restoration, decades after it was proposed by him, after Alan Gardner supported it, of the Wadi Rayyan irrigation system. It was restored, and Egypt became greatly benefited again by that. So it's a phenomenal story, but we don't have time to discuss any more either, even if we want to. But it's March 12th, little children, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 17:33 hours Eastern Daylight Time. It's a pleasure to be with you again, and I love you very much. I'm Ward Green. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.